life. Matt, it's awesome to have you here on the Bainbridge podcast.
Thanks, man. Great to see you.
I'm really excited for today because you've been a customer for a long time. You've given us an incredible amount of feedback on the product, really pushed us to make it better. But I wanted to talk about your background first in the feed. For people that don't know, feed.com is where elite athletes or aspiring elite athletes should be going for nutrition, hydration, recovery. It's an incredible site with incredible content. But before you did the feed, you had this incredible career as an entrepreneur and leader. Visage Mobile, you're acquired by Convergys. This Life, acquired by Shutterfly. You started an app, Superfly Mobile. You then ran a Tour de France team at Slipstream Sports. And then you did the feed. So I'd love to hear in your own words, you know, your sort of journey to the feed and then dive into what you're doing now at the feed.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it's sort of flip-flop back and forth between sort of sports and tech, you know, over all those years. You know, I started out, you know, racing a bike in Europe and cold and wet and, you know, eventually got to LA and ran into some guys starting an internet company and thought that was a better idea than being cold and wet on my bike. And then, you know, trial by fire, we sort of started selling college textbooks online. And this was, you know, true mid late 90s guerrilla marketing, running around college campuses, getting students to buy college textbooks from us versus the enemy, who was the college bookstore. So went through sort of that. It was sort of like my early e-commerce, you know, I guess, days, and love the how on the e-commerce side, we could get such quick feedback, right? We could do one thing and then immediately just sort of watch what happens, right? And that's sort of what I love about the feed. And then, you know, was in more venture-backed tech companies, more, you know, more software consumer tech products that have much longer feedback loop. You know, you're developing something for 6 months, 12 months, 2 years before you sort of know if it, any of it's going to work. And so, you know, along the way, yeah, like you said, we had some great successes. And then, you know, I sort of, you know, after, you know, a dozen or so years in purely tech, you know, had the opportunity to get back into cycling and with, you know, two great partners sort of, you know, run and manage our Tour de France team for a decade, a little over a decade. And it continues to exist today. So it was the Garmin, it was known over the years as Garmin. Then we brought in Cannondale and now it's EF Education First. And then EF bought the team from us. And so one of my partners, you know, runs it today. And it was a great timing for me because we sort of had this burgeoning sort of feed business that, you know, we had started and was sort of kicking along. And, you know, I was just sort of chomping at the bit to, you know, have more time to spend on it and maybe solo focus, right? So it wasn't splitting focus throughout the day. It was sort of like I could just focus on one thing. And there was already an amazing team in place. It was already, you know, I really just jumped on the wave that they had already created in terms of building the business and then, you know, had that sort of opportunity to sort of run with it. And it was sort of like the accumulation of, you know, all the sports science stuff, all the sort of inside baseball of elite endurance sports that we would do at the Tour de France and the consumer tech side of things of like, how do we make this easy for athletes to shop? You know, how do we educate them on the nutrition side and go from there?
It's, how did it always start out as like, was it just for cyclists and then started expanding? Or how did you even think about the initial target audience?
Yeah, the genesis of the idea was I bring the riders out to sponsors' offices. We'd go to Garmin headquarters in Olathe, Kansas, or we'd go do a big charity ride from, you know, San Francisco to San Diego. And along the way, we'd have dinner stops and the riders would get up in front of the crowd and or in front of an auditorium of employees of a sponsor. And we'd say, what questions do you have for these amazing athletes? And like inevitably, a majority of the questions were like, I know what a gel is. I have this gel. I don't know when to eat this gel. And all the riders were like, what? Like, not that they had a better answer, but they're like, I thought you'd want to know about something more exciting, you know, but it was always coming back to nutrition was this like common theme that everyone was asking about. It's like, wow, there's a huge you know, gap of knowledge of what the average consumer is doing and what these brands that are making these products think they know, and they're shipping them these things. They are buying them, but they really have no idea how to use them. And so the idea was, how can I marry the education that we inherently have at the tour and also new products coming in, new technologies, new strategies, and then rather than wait for like 3-4 years for them to trickle down to the sort of, you know, participant audience, you know, let's just fast track that and put it together, and we'll give away all that information for free if you then buy the products from us. And yeah, that was sort of the concept.
Oh, that's awesome. Cause I mean, I'm blown away at the quality of your content, you know, the emails and the texts and the level of depth, that you give in the reviews, you know, is pretty astounding. Like, how do you, is that all just from personal experience? Are you gathering that from team members? I mean, how are you possibly understanding all these products so intimately?
Yeah, it started out more out of desperation. You know, like, you know, we were trying to follow the classic playbook of, you know, marketing emails and product emails. And I was just like, this, it doesn't really feel like, I looked at it as an exchange of value. If you're going to take the time to open the email we send you, can I give you something that you maybe you didn't know? You know, that you didn't expect, you know, not just like hype some product, but tell you the good and the bad, but also, you know, we never want to disparage a product. You know, if a product's worth disparaging, we just don't carry it, right? Like, we don't want to ever be in that position. But, you know, every product has advantages and disadvantages and sort of tell that story. So I actually just write the emails, like literally like in an email client, like I was sending you, Ben, an email. You're like, hey, I write down what the question was that you would have asked. And then I just write you a long form response. And then, you know, add a couple links, as few as possible, and then send that out. Like, it's really just meant to be a conversation. And then it became a big thing. And then I do run out of ideas every now and then. And then, but we have a great team where we sort of, you know, we're constantly talking to our coaches who are like, you know, interfacing with athletes. Like, we have some questions, you know, for tomorrow. And I went to them and said, like, what are you guys seeing this month? Like, what are the main things that people are struggling with? And they had a great, you know, concept. And, you know, so that's tomorrow's email type thing. So the only downside is I'm not very good at writing them like 4 weeks ahead of time. Like, they're really sort of in the moment. Like, and unfortunately, a lot of them are like written and then I hit send. And so, you know, I try to, you know, fix the grammar as best I can, but, you know,
I don't know. I think it works.
They're very much hot off the press before they go
out
there.
I think that works because it very much comes through as authentic. And it feels like, you know, I'm not a writer. I'm not anywhere close to an elite athlete, but it does feel like you're talking to me. You know, you're like, oh, yeah. I tried this product. It's awesome. Here's why you would use it. I was like, yeah, this feels like so, I think it's a real, for anybody that's listening that wants to a masterclass in brand authenticity, I would urge you to sign up for Matt's emails at the feed. They're terrific.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, unfortunately, but yeah, we don't have a lot of unsubscribes, so, you know, hopefully people read them. But it's great. It's sort of become a life of their own.
These
emails. And it's been a great way to build the brand. And honestly, it's maybe even a little bit of a crutch. Like, I wish we could do, we would find better ways to add more product education to the website. So now we take the best of the emails and we put them up on the blog, on the homepage, sort of the feed insider. So that's now has a lot more really valuable content, which is essentially a lot of the emails plus some that we put up there. And so it's maybe even a curated list of the emails. So they sort of live on. But, you know, the problem is as we educate consumers on the homepage, there's always this risk of you interfere with the shopping experience, right? Like in our business, it's, you know, it's really not necessarily a subscription business. Some subscribe, you know, 20%+ of our customers are subscribers, but the 80% act just like subscribers, right? They're ordering, we sell a consumable product, you know, that's relatively low unit price, you know, with an AOV of about $100 an order. And they're essentially, you know, checking out every 45 days. And the retention's through the roof, I think probably best in class in terms of marketplaces, you know, with obviously a few exceptions, but in terms of like a focused, you know, marketplace, you know, these, our audience just keeps coming back and back.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue into another thing I wanted to talk to you about is that you've always been incredibly focused on the data and pushing the data and pushing us to get you answers in the data. Was that always your nature? Was that something you've learned from your tour days? I mean, I know that, there isn't a, is there a more data intense sport than cycling? I don't know, maybe, but
Oh, I'm sure. No, I'm sure. No, I wouldn't say it's that. I think it was more that I was the only investor in the business. So I was like desperately always trying to figure out like where can we spend money or where should we not spend money? How much money are we making? How much money are we losing? It was more out of just being like really scrappy and cost efficient, is I think what drove these big questions. And my partner Ben, who's does all the technology pieces of the business, like he's extremely data driven, and I think we just sort of play off of each other and trying to get to the heart of the answer all the time. And we live, if we can't prove it with the data, and it's we're probably doing something wrong, or it's not provable, and we probably shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. You had that great story. I don't know if you even remember this, but you said you were having a conversation with your wife, and she was like, "Is this the year we're going to make money?" You're like, "Oh, I better get focused on that."
Yeah, that's true. That definitely happened as well. So, yeah, no, we're it's fantastic. I think that's really paid off for us now, right? Like we really have a very low spend. We spend less than 8% of gross revenue on, customer acquisition, and but we're still growing at, over 65% sort of year over year. So it's, it's been great. And we really have to thank our customers, for that, because it's their loyalty. It's that cohort where we just like, it's so consistent, the reorder numbers. Like one of the things that you guys have that I love the best in the Bainbridge was what is like, it's a graph over, well, for us, probably 3 or 4 years of like what every cohort reorder rate is at 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, 48 months. So we'd go through these periods, especially like the Tour de France, and usually in July, 1 year during COVID was in September, but we would see these spikes where we would do a lot more advertising because we could do TV and some other channels. And then we're like, well, we got them on TV. They came in for a promotion. Are they really a great customer? And it was only when we started to see your data, we're like, oh, wow, those customers are actually better than the customers we're getting in the non-promo period. Let's do a, how much more of that can we do in, those months? And so, that's been fascinating for us. But it's probably more than anything, it's the consistency. Like I don't think we've ever seen a bad cohort month. Like it's they're very much the same.
Well, it is it's fascinating when you how much memory sometimes these cohorts have. You the how you acquired them will play forward into their performance, month after month, year after year. And it's interesting to see that and play out in the data and then be able to put that together to what you did to drive it or what you didn't do. And you guys have been exceptional at that. You've been great students.
Yeah, well, I think we never really thought of that. Like every year we were trying to be like, how much are we going to sell this month? Like, and we're trying to do this in November or December, right? And we're trying to plan 6, 12 months out. And we're like, well, what did we do last year? How much do you think we're going to grow? We're just guessing. And then what you guys did was the ability to say, no, you don't need to guess on like the top, like all the number, because we're really confident that these customers are going to come back in this month, and that, in aggregate, the returning customers are going to spend X. So now you just need to figure out how many new people you think you can get and what they're going to spend. And all of a sudden we started limiting variables. It was so accurate that like, at the end of July, we were at, so we're, little just over, more than halfway through the year, we were $8,000 of our, like we were $8,000 ahead of our year-end plan, like, which is incredible to be that precise, on such a big number, right? Like we're talking about a fraction of a percent. And every month we're within, thousands or tens of thousands of dollars of plan. And then we've started, earlier this year, we started to break every month down into every day. So we, like, you guys are giving us like, hey, the plan says you should do this and we want to hit the plan. But in order to hit the plan, we're like, hey, we got to look at this more on a daily basis and build this up and make sure it's realistic. So we list like every day what we're doing for marketing, every day what we're doing for external promotions. And we put an average for the month in of revenue, and then we do a strategic tilt. So we're like, okay, we're pretty sure we're going to do this, right? And then every day we think, oh, this will do, you know, 30K more, or this promotion we think will do 80K more this day. And then, you know, but those have become so precise that, you know, now we're like we'll know within 3 days of a month period, within any 3 days, if we don't think we're going to hit the target, because we can see what's happening. So we track our plus minus on the target every month, every single day. Like every single day we go in and add in the sales. And that's been incredibly helpful to just, you know, further reduce the risks of, you know, what we're trying to do.
That's really cool. I assume you're factoring in things like, you know, we're recording this on the Friday before Labor Day weekend. So you guys are saying like, hey, we know that Labor Day is going to be good or bad or whatever, because we've seen it before.
We do. Like Labor Days would be normally slower. Well, so we have the year over year. So we sort of already have the history built into the multiple, right? So that's sort of, you know, playing into the goal. What do we think it's going to do? You know, this weekend, the Tour of Spain is on TV. So we have some Tour de France. We have some ads running on CNBC on Saturday and Sunday. So we know those are going to give them some lift. We know the emails will get a little less clicks, you know, because everyone's out doing something fun, you know, so that's to be expected. But then we know that, you know, we like to play in the sort of, you know, we don't do a ton of sales, like broad-based store-wide sales throughout the year, but Labor Day is a good excuse to do one on Sunday and Monday. So we know we're doing that, you know, and then it's a question of, you know, what kind of offer do we have? Is it, you know, the one that drives the most sales, but is the most expensive offer to us? Or is it one that is, you know, very limited to a small subset of products, you know, or is it somewhere in the middle? And, you know, we try to hit somewhere in the middle most of the time. You know, when it's a really big, like discount or store wide, it's not clear that you're not just stealing from later in the month because of the repeat purchase rate. So then we, all of a sudden, we see people just buy ahead of plan or overbuy a little bit. So you don't end up really that much further ahead, you know, at the end of the day. So we're always trying to be creative with how we do that.
Well, and I think that's, you raise a great point, because, you know, we see that where sometimes people need to make up revenue. They launch a sale, they pull that revenue forward. But you've now trained the customers that, like, hey, if I just wait around long enough, I'll get a better discount. And now, you know, that becomes a problem in and of itself. So
we really try to move our customers to what we call feed credit, you know, which would be, you could consider as a loyalty points program, but we think it's just simpler to understand the dollars amount. And everyone has a balance, you know, stored, you know, and they earn, you know, rewards for spending $100, spending $200, things that help us become more cost efficient. We motivate them on, you know, people that are parts of clubs and teams that we work with might be getting recurring credit. So every quarter, you know, every 3 months, they're getting sort of new credit topped up on their account. So we have really tried not to do discount codes anymore at all. They're very challenging for a lot of reasons and not necessarily, you know, super desired by the customer after that one time thing. And we feel we can more richly reward the customers with credit that they can spend, you know, to subsidize their order.
Yeah, that's smart. Is it hard to manage that program, or are you using a tool for that?
Well, no, we built it. So that's one of the many things that Ben built. So on our team, I would say that, you know, we're still very much like taking the, you know, 15 years I spent in Silicon Valley and, you know, 10 of those with Ben, or more with doing different tech companies. Yeah. And we just build our own stuff, right? That's sort of the secret. Like, let me give you an example. Like the feed was a terrible business idea if anyone ever evaluated. Because one of the big value propositions we wanted to have was that you could buy just one bar or one gel. Like We didn't want to force you to buy 12. But obviously, when people, Amazon forces you to buy 12, it's because the cost to go pick that item, you know, they're never going to make money if it's just one item. But we as consumers and athletes were like, that's what we want. I don't want to buy boxes of 12. Like, I want, you know, one chocolate, you know, I want three chocolate chip, two brownie, three macadamia nut Cliff bars, or I want to go, you know, so I want to, I buy chews from, you know, Scratch, Power Bar, you know, Cliff, you know, Honey Stinger. Like, I like to have varieties. So I don't need 84 chews this month. You know what I mean? Like, I just need my 20, you know, so I mix them up between all the brands and, you know, I subscribe. So it just shows up every month. But, you know, so for me, the single serves were great, but we couldn't find a warehouse management system that could do that. We certainly couldn't find a 3PL because they're like, oh, it's 30 cents a bag. And we're like, wait, no, the dollar, the product's only a dollar. Like, we can't pay you 30 cents to pick it when the product costs. And that was the best deal out there. Most were much more than that. So we wrote our own software, which is a great story. Like, we had this guy. This is when I was more the investor, not running the business, and the guy's running it. And they said, hey, one of the athletes that's here this summer, like picking and packing, you know, he says he's, you know, also a software engineer, and he could write a system to make it way more efficient for us to pick in the warehouse and scan products and stuff. I was like, oh, come on, guys. Like, you know, this caught, like, there's companies that's like, this is a big business. Like, we're not going to just write this. And I was like, how much is it? And they're like, he says he'll do it for $800. And I was like, oh, for $800, I'll take the risk. Like, just because they really wanted to do it and they wanted to support this guy. And I was like, great, go for it.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same software we use today. So, and Neil, who wrote it, you know, he was a consultant for a long time. Like, we didn't touch it for like 4 years. You know, maybe we made some marginal improvements to it. And then we're like, hey, we got to really grow this. And then, you know, three years ago, we really started working on it. Neil works full time, you know, crazy amounts of time running this software, and it's expansive now, but our entire operations of our warehouse, everything we do, we write all the software. And that was a terrible idea maybe when we were low scale, but now when we want to do something unique, we're not constrained by APIs or limitations of that software, and we optimized that whole system for picking and packing. So what we did was we figured out, where do people buy a lot of, like, variant products, right? One can of soup, you know, one of this is at the grocery store. So we set up the distribution center to look like a grocery store. So what happens is we have, like, aisle runners that run the aisle and grab the stuff super fast, right? Yeah. And then they pass it to a checkout station that it looks just like a grocery store, like conveyor belt, and that people bring it in. And we have a scanning system, just like their POS, and we scan all the products out, and then we make all our boxes now custom, like, all the products are like 3D scanned. So the box has been made just per order. So we know it fits in perfectly, no padding, more environmentally friendly. So they just, like, go lay it on the box and ship it out. So it cost us, you know, well less than $2 in order to pick, pack, and ship it. But it's all because we wrote our own flow, right? Our own software.
That's insane. That's cool. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's that's an area that so many brands struggle with, is like the fulfillment is, like, completely outsourced, and their option for reducing that is going and finding another 3PL, you know, whereas you kind of bit the bullet and now you can.
We would have been out of business 5 years ago if we had worked out a 3PL. That there's zero chance that we could have done what we've done. And then we've turned it into a strategic advantage. So our goal, we don't hit the goal every time, you know, but our goal is to ship every order within 2 hours. And my view is, the way I compete with Amazon is, you know, you place, it depends on how many emails you get in a day, but, you know, say you're getting a modest amount, I want to see your order confirmation email. And, like, literally the next email, or, like, two under in that, is like, your order has shipped. Like, that's our goal. But now we're doing more and more stuff that's, you know, just-in-time manufacturing of these orders. So I mentioned we build a box, right? So we have a big, huge machine that takes flat corrugate, cuts it, folds it, and then outputs a box specific to your order. We get all this product, so the products all get to pick. Some people might order, I have one of these here, it's like these feed formulas. So now, rather than buying your supplements in bottles, same supplements, same bottles, same products from the same brands, you know, I hate the bottles on the counter. My wife's always like, there's too many bottles, get rid of them. And then you got to open each one every morning, count the pills. So I was like, let's just like pack them in little pouches. So, you know, we're not changing the products, we're not making the pills, but we can give you a better daily solution. So now we got to make one of these boxes in 2 hours. And then I think you had a water bottle there. I don't know if your name's on it, but we for years would give out water bottles with orders. And we said, like, what's better than a water bottle? We're like, well, why can't we just print it with your name on it or a custom design?
Yeah.
So then we figured out how to buy this bottle printer. And this is all the same software we were talking about before that runs the operations. So now your order comes in, a clock starts, we're picking it, we're making the box, we're filling the pouches with pills, and then we're printing a bottle that says Ben or Bainbridge on it.
Yeah.
And all of those things are reassembled and out the door, hopefully within the 2 hours.
That's so awesome. So,
yeah, it's super fun. And so, you know, this is a very, we want to turn that into a strategic advantage for us, right? Like a better way to service the customers. So,
Matt, what have I missed? What do you wish I had asked you about, you know, the feed or your background or, you know, that you think might be interesting to a listener?
I guess maybe don't reinvent the wheel on the tech side. Like, you know, we're a proud sort of Shopify, you know, business, and we couldn't have been here with sort of what they enabled us to do. But don't be afraid to sort of build around that. So we work with Shogun, and we built a completely headless front. We had to be the first, for sure, the first marketplace to ever launch a headless front end on Shopify. And for sure, Ben made it the fastest, you know, that's out there. I would argue it's the fastest Shogun headless store in the world, you know, certainly for the breadth of products that we have.
Yeah.
So, you know, where we have solutions, we try to build, you know, we sort of build technology around that, right? And we sort of figure out how to master that. And before we build it, we sort of like jimmy rig it in Airtable and say, like, is this going to be a thing? You know, before we like, you know, because we built too many things and then they wouldn't turn into anything. So we'd be like, okay, like, what's the fast, like, how do we get this live in 3 days? How do we manage the information in Airtable and any sort of manual processes? And let's do it for a month and see if it works. And if it works, then we'll, you know, build a, you know, custom app to sort of manage it more efficiently going forward.
Nice. Well, Matt, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I had a blast. I learned a ton about the feed, which I thought I knew a lot already. So this has really been fun for me.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Ben. And thank you for all the hard work you, Austin, and the whole team do to give us our numbers every month. And we appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks.